Welcome, it's Divine. This is episode 496 of the Divine Intervention podcast. In today's podcast, I'm going to be addressing the topic that I like to title, Demystifying Aortic Regurg. Demystifying Aortic Regurg. This is something I know, I feel like I've seen a lot of questions from people in recent times on aortic regurg. And they just, many people have memorized the findings, you know, that people that have aortic regurg, it's a diastolic decrescendo murmur, heart burst at the left third intercostal space that may radiate to the left lower sternal border, blah, 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 blah. Fine. Many people know that off the top of their heads, but there are many findings in aortic regurg that I feel like for quite a number of people do not make much sense. So every now and then I like to put out a podcast or two on topics that I've noticed that, man, a lot of people seem to be having issues with, so that we can address them and you can fully understand it instead of just memorizing it. So I suspect this is something that anyone taking step one, step two, or step three is going to benefit from. So what's the classic vignette for aortic regurg? Well, they'll give you a question about a person. Typically, this person, they will tell you that the person is having a shortness of breath. The person may have signs and symptoms of heart failure. But the critical thing you're going to notice in the Q-stem is that the person's systolic blood pressure is going to be high and the person's diastolic blood pressure is going to be low. So whenever you see a person that has a blood pressure of like 140 over 50, for example, that's just a huge anomaly. Because if you think about it, normally, blood pressures for the average human being in a normal range should be about 120 over 80. The difference between those two numbers, the number at the top and the number at the bottom, is what's called pulse pressure. That range should be 40. But you see a person that has a blood pressure of like 130 over 40, the systolic blood pressure is higher than normal, the diastolic blood pressure is lower than normal. The spread, the difference between those two numbers, is what's called the pulse pressure. So the pulse pressure widens, it increases in aortic regurg. So why exactly does that happen? Well, if you think about it, so this is me just going straight up into the pathophys of things. If you think about it for a second here, normally, if you look at the operation of the aortic valve, during systole, the pressure in the left ventricle exceeds the pressure in the aorta. So the aortic valve is going to open, blood is going to rush out from the left ventricle into the aorta. Blood is being ejected from the left ventricle into the aorta. Now, over time, as the aorta fills with blood, the pressure in it is going to rise. That pressure in the aorta that is rising as it fills with blood from the left ventricle is the systolic blood pressure. I'm going to say that again. That pressure that builds up in the aorta as blood fills it from the left ventricle is the systolic blood pressure. That initial, memorize that word, initial pressure in the aorta after blood comes out of the left ventricle is the systolic blood pressure. But over time, so over time means after that initial rise in pressure, over time, give it like a second or two, the pressure you then start seeing in the aorta after it has filled is the diastolic blood pressure. Diastolic blood pressure. So the thing is, you may already begin to see that, oh, over time, the pressure in that aorta is going to build up. And then, since the pressure in the aorta is building up, at some point, it will become bigger than the pressure in the left ventricle. So you'll think that, blood may flow back from the aorta into the left ventricle. But in a normal person, that does not happen because the aortic valve closes. Again, if you understand the normal physiology, when I'm start bringing in the pathophys of the aortic regurg and its problems, it'll make more sense to you. So that's what's supposed to happen. The aortic valve is supposed to close, right, as the pressure in the aorta builds up and it exceeds the pressure in the left ventricle. But in aortic regurg, what exactly happens? In aortic regurg, the aortic valve is not properly closed. And it's not properly closed for many different reasons. The big thing, if they ask you like, what is one of the biggest risk factors for aortic regurg on your exam? You want to think about dilation of the aortic root. I'm going to say that again. You want to think about dilation of the aortic root. So in many cases, we have no idea what's causing that aortic root to dilate. I just kind of think of aortic regurg as, wow, you have these valves inside the pipe that is your aorta. But if the valve, if the pipe becomes wider and wider, like a bigger circle, then those valve leaflets are being pulled apart. Since those valve leaflets are being pulled apart, then they won't come together nicely. So blood can backflow into the left ventricle, right? Although in some other people, though, this aortic root dilation, we can see this in people that like are very old, people that have syphilis, tertiary syphilis and the otitis. We can see it in osteogenesis imperfecta. Remember, that's an autosomal dominant disorder, collagen type 1 mutation. We can see this in people that have had aortic dissection, people that have Marfan's, people that have Behçet's disease, Ehlers-Danlos, ankylosing spondylitis, even in lupus. We can find it in many of these people. And if you have really nasty endocarditis that torches your aorta, that can certainly cause that problem. So let's then go step by step in what happens. So think about it. If the aortic valve is incompetent, which is what we call aortic regurg, then there's going to be backflow of blood from the aorta into the left ventricle, from the aorta into the left ventricle. So think about this with me. If there is backflow of blood from the aorta into the left ventricle, how many places is the left ventricle receiving preload from? Just work with me here. How many places is the left ventricle receiving preload from? It's receiving preload from two places. Normally, the left ventricle is only supposed to receive preload from the left atrium. But when you have aortic regurg, you're getting preload not just from the left atrium, but you're also getting preload back from the aorta. So since you have two places contributing to the blood coming back to the left ventricle, the preload of the left ventricle is going to increase. If the preload of your left ventricle increases, according to the Frank Starling principle, what do you think is going to happen to your cardiac output? Your cardiac output is going to rise. That's the truth. So there are two things that are now emptying into the left ventricle. Normally, in a normal person, it's only the left atrium that fills the left ventricle with blood. But now, the left ventricle is being filled with blood from the left atrium and from the aorta. So it has two sources of preload. So overall, the preload of the left ventricle is going up. So if the preload is going up, what's happening to your end diastolic volume? Your end diastolic volume is also going up. Again, what does end diastolic volume mean? End diastolic volume just means how much blood is in the left ventricle after the left ventricle has been filled with blood. Normally, the left ventricle is only supposed to be filled with blood from the left atrium. But if blood is coming not just from the left atrium alone, but is also coming back from the aorta, then it's going to be more filling with blood, right? So you're going to have an increase in your end diastolic volume. So if you have an increase in your end diastolic volume, what's going to happen to your stroke volume? Your stroke volume is going to go up. Simple as that. If you put more blood in the left ventricle, then when the left ventricle is ejecting that blood from it, it's going to inject more blood than normal. So your stroke volume is going to go up. Remember, if you have an increase in end diastolic volume, your stroke volume should go up. That's pretty much like an application of the Frank Starling principle. More preload in the heart, more end diastolic volume in the heart, bigger stroke volume. And obviously, if your stroke volume goes up, your cardiac output is clearly going to go up. Because remember, your cardiac output is your heart rate multiplied by your stroke volume. If your stroke volume is shooting up, then obviously your cardiac output has to shoot up. And as your cardiac output is shooting up, what do you think is going to happen to that initial pressure in the aorta? Remember, I said pay attention to that word initial, because that's your systolic blood pressure. If your cardiac output is shooting up, if the amount of blood that you're ejecting from the left ventricle is shooting up, then what's going to happen to that initial pressure in the aorta? Well, here's the thing. The initial pressure in the aorta is going to shoot up as well. Your systolic blood pressure is going to shoot up. Okay? Your systolic blood pressure is going to shoot up. Okay. So remember I said when blood gets into the aorta, the initial blood that gets in there, boom, is that initial buildup of blood is going to cause what we know as the systolic blood pressure. But we said that over time, like a second or two or whatever, I'm just making up those numbers, but just over time, the blood in the aorta kind of relaxes a little bit, right? That's what creates your diastolic blood pressure, right? Remember, in diastole, you have like relaxation of stuff. So the thing is, in the aorta, that blood that gets there initially, over time, is going to relax. That's what creates the diastolic blood pressure. Normally, that blood only relaxes inside the aorta. That's the truth. Normally, that blood only relaxes inside the aorta. That's it. Inside the aorta, that's it. But when you have aortic regurg, that blood has a bigger, wider space to relax into. Think about it. Normally, it's just the aorta the blood can relax into. But now the blood can relax into the aorta, but the blood can also relax into the left ventricle. So it's almost like the blood has more room to spread out. Just kind of think about it. Let's say you're laying down on a twin size bed, but then someone gives you like a king size bed. When you have a king size bed, that is way bigger. You're going to have more room to relax. So normally the aorta, that's where blood can, blood that gets into the aorta initially over time just relaxes in the aorta. But man, when you have aortic regurg, it has more room to relax because some of it can go back into the left ventricle. So since the aorta, the blood in the aorta has more space to relax into, what do you think? What exactly do you think is going to happen to your diastolic blood pressure? It's going to go down. It's going to go down. It's going to go down. So think about it. We've defended and explained that, the systolic blood pressure goes up. And the diastolic blood pressure goes down. Since the systolic blood pressure is going up and the diastolic blood pressure is going down, what do you think is happening to the difference between those two numbers? The difference is getting bigger. That's why the pulse pressure increases. That's literally why the pulse pressure increases. Remember, pulse pressure is the spread between your systolic and your diastolic blood pressures. It's the difference. If you subtract your diastolic blood pressure from your systolic blood pressure, that's literally your pulse pressure. That's literally your pulse pressure. So what are you going to see on physical exam? Because many people memorize all these crazy things like Corrigan's pulse. Yes, that's a finding in aortic regurg, right? It's like a big upstroke and collapse of your pulses. Again, that's something that happens. If you understand what I just explained, you understand exactly what that happens, what that means, right? Or you see like this Demosay sign where the person's head is bobbing as they have each heartbeat, that's because of the wide pulse pressure. To be honest with you, many of the physical exam findings in aortic regurg are wide pulse pressure phenomena. That's the truth. They are wide pulse pressure phenomena, right? Or you hear of the water hammer pulse. Again, it's a wide pulse pressure phenomena, right? So just kind of keep that at the back of your mind. And over time, right, if we're kind of extending this knowledge a little bit, and then I'll wrap this up because I want this to be a short podcast. But over time, if you think about it, this aortic regurg kind of becomes problematic, right? Maybe like, why? Well, all that excess blood that keeps coming back to the left ventricle is going to cause volume overload. The volume overload with the left ventricle is going to ultimately lead to eccentric hypertrophy. And when you have that eccentric, so basically you're adding your sarcomeres in series this time because you're having to deal with all this extra volume. So you're trying to increase the cavity size of the left ventricle. You're going to have eccentric hypertrophy. That's going to cause an S3 heart sound. This will ultimately lead to heart failure. And you're going to get in trouble. Now, one common thing that people get on exams is, how do you differentiate acute aortic regurg from chronic aortic regurg? Well, here's the thing. The way you differentiate those two is how sudden do their symptoms start. People that have acute aortic regurg, their symptoms are going to start pretty suddenly. That's why it's called acute aortic regurgitation. But chronic aortic regurg, these people may barely have any symptoms for sometimes even years. But then over time, they then start developing symptoms. That's the simple, easy way to differentiate those two. Usually when a person has acute aortic regurg, they're going to have like floric pulmonary edema that develops very quickly because all that blood regurgitating back into the left ventricle, regurgitating to the, there'll be less emptying of the left atrium into the left ventricle over time, and then the fluid will just back up into the lungs. So you're going to have an increase in hydrostatic pressures within the pulmonary capillaries, and you're going to get into a lot of trouble with pulmonary edema. And also, another thing they can do with aortic regurg, again, these are just bonus points that you should know for your exam. They can easily make an arrow question out of aortic regurg. So let's walk through a few arrows rapidly, and then let's talk about treatment, because I want the arrows to be the last part we stop on. That's like the high yield, super awesome part. So obviously I love physiology. So basically you can treat aortic regurg, just replace the valve, especially when the person is beginning to kind of go into heart failure symptoms. You want to go ahead and replace the valve. That's kind of important. And then you can give them the heart failure drugs, right? Like beta blockers. You can give them ACE inhibitors and whatnot. But I'll say if you really had to pick a drug on your exam, just focus mostly on ACE inhibitors. Beta blockers, you know, for years were like, oh, you got aortic regurg, we can't give you a beta blocker. Because think about it, which makes logical sense, right? If you have aortic regurg, you take a beta blocker. A beta blocker is going to slow down your heart. If you slow down the heart, what's that going to do to your diastolic filling time? Well, it's going to increase. So you're basically slowing down the heart so it has more time in diastole. So you're going to have more time for the regurgitation to happen, which is not ideal, right? But the thing is, as you're going to see when we get to the arrow part of this, there are certain neurohormonal changes that happen to a person's heart when they have chronic aortic regurg that beta blockers can actually really help with. But if you had to pick only one drug to treat aortic regurg, pick an ACE inhibitor or an angiotensin II receptor blocker. That's certainly going to help. So those are kind of like the big things. But beta blockers, again, back in the day, they were contraindicated. But these days, especially when you have like aortic regurg that's kind of causing heart failure symptoms, beta blockers are not always the worst idea in the world. I'll just kind of say that. Okay, but again, if you had to pick one drug, pick an ACE inhibitor. So let's go into the arrow questions. But again, overall, you want to go ahead and replace the valve. Simple as that. Now, what happens to your preload in aortic regurg? We've talked about this already. Your preload is going to go up because the left ventricle is being filled from the left atrium and the aorta. Okay, what happens to your end diastolic volume? Again, it's going to go up because your preload is going up. We've talked about that. What happens to your cardiac output? Well, it's going to go up because your preload is going up. Your end diastolic volume is going up. We've talked about that. What happens to your pulse pressure? It goes up. Why? Because again, your systolic blood pressure is rising. Your diastolic blood pressure is dropping. So it's going to raise your pulse pressure. Okay. Now, what happens to your what happens to your levels of renin when you have aortic regurg? Well, I want you to think about that. Think about if you have aortic, because normally the blood that gets into the aorta is supposed to flow forward in the aorta into the organs of the body, your kidneys and whatnot. But when you have aortic regurg, that is not all that blood that is forward flowing. Some of it is backward flowing. So are you going to be perfusing the renal arteries very well? No, you're not. So your juxtaglomerular cells are going to freak out. So you're going to make a lot of renin. As you make more renin, right, so your renin is going to go up. Guess what? Your angiotensin 1 is also going to go up as well. And as your angiotensin 1 goes up, your angiotensin 2 is going to go up as well. And as your angiotensin 2 goes up, what's going to happen to your aldosterone levels? Your aldosterone is going to shoot up as well. So those are the lab values, right? So they may even give you some other labs, like, oh, what do you expect their potassium to look like? Well, they're going to have hypokalemia. Because again, when your aldosterone is high, you're going to excrete more potassium from the kidneys. You're going to have hypokalemia. What would you expect the acid-base status to be? Well, you should expect the metabolic alkalosis. Because again, when you have high aldosterone is going to cause you to excrete hydrogen ions. As you excrete many hydrogen ions, that's going to cause you to have a metabolic alkalosis. So you're going to have a hypokalemia, you're going to have a metabolic alkalosis. So again, remember, aortic regurg can cause secondary hyperaldosteronism. Again, you can just see the many different ways they can go with these concepts. Okay, so I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. Again, I have these, I have review courses that I offer if you're interested. Again, I love to explain pathophys. I love to make integrations. I love to, and you know, my review courses are not lecture-based. They're all problem sets. And then I have some helpful tables I also make available to you. But I have a course starting on, for step one all the way to step three. I have a test-taking class this Thursday. I have a biostats class on, a four-hour class on Friday. And then I have a social sciences, quality improvement, ethics, you know, healthcare systems, communications, and professionalism class on Saturday. And then for people taking step two, I have a 20-hour course next week. And then for people taking step one in the second week of January, God willing, I do have a 25-hour class. If you're interested in any of these classes, shoot me an email. I'll give you more information. Although I also made a podcast recently. It's called December Classes. So just check that out. It talks about my December and January classes. And then I offer one-on-one tutoring for all the USMLE exams. I have these podcasts on Apple, Google, and Spotify. I have a YouTube channel, so check that out. You can see the videos I've made on there. And then I have another website called DivineInterventionLifeLessons.com. Every week I post like 2 podcasts. Actually, there's an Apple podcast associated with that. Biblical Perspective, I address a life lesson. So if you're interested in any of those, just check those out. But again, I think just listen to this podcast and I'll see you in the next one. Bye.